Welcome to the Making Impact series, where we talk to life science thought leaders, startup founders, and innovation hubs from around the world, where they are creating and innovating from drug discovery to the final stage of getting life-altering treatments to patients. In this series, we'll explore how their technologies and initiatives are making a huge impact in their community, locally and globally. I'm your host, Helen Konozopoulos, the co-founder of Odea.ai. I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Toronto at the Department of Computer Science. I would like to really welcome Liam Kaufman from Winterlight Labs to the show. Hi, Liam.
Helen, hi. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while. I mean, we've known each other for many years, and I just really wanted you to get onto the show because I really wanted to talk to you about what you're working on, updates that you've had in the last 2-3 years. And I really wanted to kind of talk about, what is your origin story? So how have you started Winterlight Labs?
For sure. So maybe I can start with a bit of an introduction on Winterlight. So we make speech-based digital biomarkers to quantify neurology and psychiatry. The origin of Winterlight was back in 2015. I had this interesting background in computer science and neuroscience, and I really wanted to use those different backgrounds to come up with different applications to help people, clinicians, patients, et cetera. And so I was fortunate to connect with co-founders at the University of Toronto who had developed some really interesting technology to quantify speech to actually detect Alzheimer's disease with as little as about 30 seconds of speech. And I'd actually worked with patients with Alzheimer's disease, and I knew how cumbersome and subjective these pen and paper tests were to quantify Alzheimer's disease. And so pretty quickly, we realized we had something that could really make a difference and help patients, clinicians, et cetera.
I was always, from the beginning, when you were working on Winterlight and being able to use this type of technology to diagnose in such a small amount of time, what were the first, when you were first pitching this out into the world, what were the first comments you got when you were out there?
For sure. So one of the first things I did was I approached clinicians because I was a little bit skeptical. I knew others would be skeptical. And so I wanted to get a sense of what clinicians thought about this. And so when I first met with physicians, neurologists, et cetera, one of the things that surprised me was that they would say things like, you know, when I meet with a patient who has Alzheimer's disease, I can kind of pick up on the fact that they sound a bit different, that they're having trouble remembering the names of children, grandchildren, et cetera. And I'm not surprised that this technology works. We've been doing this subjectively. We can't necessarily put a number on some of these observations, but we know that speech changes with Alzheimer's disease along with a number of other diseases. So that sort of reassured me that we were on the right track and that we had something that was tangible.
So the use case is really, you know, can you go a little bit deeper on like a day in the life of someone who has, you know, someone who has Alzheimer's, who is going through their lives and say like over a decade or two, what would those changes be just normally and their relationship and their journey with their doctors?
For sure. So right now, unfortunately, like there's no treatment for Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's pathology, so like the disease that causes the symptoms that we know as Alzheimer's disease, typically starts 10 to 20 years before a diagnosis is made. So maybe 5 years before a diagnosis is made, someone might notice very mild things. So maybe they forgot the car keys. Maybe they're having trouble finding the right word for something. But the symptoms are pretty subtle at this point. And then over a period of a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, the symptoms start to progress. And then at some point, it starts to impact what are called activities of daily living. So these are things like being able to tie your shoes, wash your hands, feed yourself, et cetera. And then at that point, you progress from having what's called mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's disease. And so it's much more impactful once you've had that diagnosis. So you've sort of reached a critical threshold.
And that, like, you know, you realize that someone forgetting their keys to, you know, even forgetting their children's names. I think that that's been very, we have a few family members that are going through this. And, you know, being able to, knowing that there is no cure, is there any way, if you catch it earlier, does that help? Does that, you know, is it, can you start can you be proactive? And I think this is where you come in, is like, can you be proactive in their lives?
Yeah, there's a couple different fields of thought here. So from the point of an individual, if you detect it earlier, there are some things that you might be able to do that might be able to like reduce the decline, or even on a more practical basis, just start to help to prepare for the care that you will need. So whether it's like arranging your will, things like that, making sure that you have senior care lined up, making sure that you have caregivers, all those things could be helpful before it progresses. Ultimately, a lot of the studies around things like exercise, diet, et cetera, show only modest changes at that point. But for us, at this stage, where we think we can help people the most is really in clinical research. So a lot of pharmaceutical companies that are looking to come up with different treatments to stop the pathology or stop the disease from getting worse, they think that intervening as early as possible will stop that damage from happening and progressing. And so what they're looking for are tools that are more subtle, more sensitive to be able to detect those changes. And so what we're typically helping with is measuring what's called response to therapy in clinical trials, and looking at how people change over time.
So do you think if you can get, I mean, you're working with pharmaceutical companies, like that, we'll go deeper into that thinking, the thinking around, if I can at least test and start experimenting or start understanding quicker in the person's life, then there could potentially be treatments in the future. Like there could be something that can, is that your hope and goal? Is that if we can catch it early enough, do clinical trials, you know, get new treatments out, get new, you know, therapies, that somehow we can kind of, you know, I don't want to say stop completely, but at least stop the degeneration, like, you know, to stop that kind of, you know, the illness.
For sure, that's the hope. And in neurology and psychiatry, there's been this challenge where a lot of the tools that we use to measure efficacy or whether treatment works have been really blunt and not very sensitive. But in the last 5 to 10 years, that started starting to change pretty dramatically. So whether it's blood biomarkers for Alzheimer's disease or PET scans or things like digital biomarkers, measuring speech objectively or measuring memory, those things could have huge impacts on not just detecting people earlier, but also being able to measure those symptoms in, say, shorter time periods to be able to run trials faster and find treatments sooner.
Have you had any, in the last few years, have you had any success or a journey that can show success for you? Like, what is a use case that you've done, clinical trial, pharma, patient, doctor, that you think would be a good example of that you're going in the right direction and changing those past journeys of that blunt, that kind of blunt ways of diagnosis to now, you know, using your methodologies, using your technology?
For sure. So, you know, we came from an atypical background for a startup in which that we had a solution in search of a problem. And so that's always like a very challenging starting point for a startup. And so part of our challenge is really figuring out how we could use the technology to help solve real problems. And so as we started to work with pharma, we quickly identified this challenge that they have, which is being able to monitor change over time. So to answer your question more directly, we work with a number of pharmaceutical companies. Some of them we can't talk about, but some of them are public. Like, for instance, we work with a Genentech. We published research last summer showing that with about 2 minutes of speech, we could create severity measures that were equivalent to an assessment that takes about 35 to 40 minutes for a clinician to administer. And so our contacts at Genentech were actually, you know, incredibly pleased that the results were roughly equivalent, and they don't even necessarily have to be better. I mean, if you can do this with 2 minutes of speech versus a 45-minute clinician-administered assessment, that's already huge. And then if you can start to chip away at that, improve with AI and machine learning, then you can start to get something that's potentially much more effective, powerful, et cetera.
I think the also, you know, the other issue with this is, you know, it's amazing. And that's amazing that you can get to like 2 minutes and understand where the person is at, where the patient is at. The part I think that is also is getting access, you know, getting access to this technology. Waiting to get clinical treatment, getting tested, there are months of waiting periods And I believe when it comes to certain individuals, each person is different, that it could go downhill quite quickly for someone if they, you know, if you're, or it could be progressing quite faster or slower. And I think being able to have access to something right away versus waiting for to meet a doctor or to do a clinical trial or you know, it's much more faster to get in front of someone. So how is accessibility working for you? You know, are you getting, do you find that you're being able to get in front of more patients or quicker, or is that a goal for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I worked with a cognitive neurologist, one of the challenges that her patients had was they would come from places that were 4 or 5 hours away from the doctor's office. And so it would be a huge endeavor just to come to the doctor's office for a couple hours. And now multiply that across, thousands of different patients that are all over Canada or the US, et cetera. And for us, this is something that we thought about. But really came to the forefront during COVID when people weren't coming to the clinic in person, weren't showing up in clinical trials. And so pretty quickly we saw demand to be able to do these assessments remotely and at home. And obviously that was a fix for COVID, but also that helps to make this much more accessible. And so instead of having someone drive for 4 hours every 3 months in a clinical trial or after they've been diagnosed, they can potentially do this on their iPad, their iPhone, or the device of a loved one. And we started to see that where caregivers started to administer the assessments, and it became much more practical for people to participate in research. And when you extend that to when there's an effective treatment, this could be a really practical way to diagnose and monitor people remotely.
This really changes when we say, like, when we talk about getting accessibility and getting more treatment or getting more assessment in the hands of people. This is, you know, doing it on your phone or iPad. That's just crazy. That is that will really change the way we learn about ourselves. We learn about, you know, because I think now a lot of times people see, like, you know, people are thinking, oh, that's really far away from me. But being able to track in your life, we track so many other things in our other biomarkers. Do you feel that this is going to get further away, or not further away, give more access to people further down in the ages, like 40s, 50s, you know, who would have never thought that I have to check this or think about it? Do you feel like this will then open up accessibility across ages versus, you know, mom and dad are getting older. We always know that's what happened to their grandparents. You know, you kind of have this thinking, but do you find that you can now open it up more than to the usual patient or the usual person?
I think that will happen. I mean, if you think about the current process, you have to go to a tertiary care center, which again might be hours away from where you live. That's a huge burden, and you might be willing to do that if you're much further along in the course of your disease. But if you're, in your 40s or 50s or 60s, and you're just noticing maybe mild changes, it may not be worth taking a day off work to drive somewhere far away. And so, if you can take a quick test, or monitor yourself in a relatively effortless way, that could be a great way of starting to detect disease earlier, especially when that treatment becomes available.
Yeah, this is amazing. It gets really to the gets into your hands and you're able to use it right away. I think you're making some amazing, you know, amazing like strides, I think, in how we diagnose ourselves. And it's very empowering. It's very empowering to have that for ourselves to say, you know, being proactive in our lives. And this is very exciting. I want to also do one more question. I've got two more questions that I was thinking about. One is, do you have any more initiatives? You always have many initiatives, but do you have any initiatives that you want to explore? You said machine learning, artificial intelligence, any other types of emerging technologies that you've been looking into and want to explore in your company, or you are already exploring?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've been doing over the past couple of years is going beyond Alzheimer's disease. And so what we found is that when you work with a company like J&J or Genentech, they're often working in multiple therapeutic areas. And what we've heard time and time again is that speech changes, not just in Alzheimer's disease, but in schizophrenia, depression, different types of dementia, Parkinson's, et cetera. And so increasingly, we are being asked to support those different therapeutic areas. And so that's something that we've done. And I think as we start to go into different areas that actually have more effective treatments, whether it's Parkinson's or depression, there's a real opportunity to help people in the real world, not just in clinical research. And that's something that we're really excited about. And as we go into the real world, obviously the demands for the technology increases. It's sort of a less controlled setting. So people aren't sitting in a lab or they aren't sitting in a hospital. They're doing this at home with various different types of like recording devices or background noises. And so that makes it even more challenging to ensure that, like the measurement is done effectively, that people are doing it effectively. And so I think that's where relying on different types of machine learning to do quality assurance, to make sure that these samples are valid, to make sure that you're recording the right person, to make sure that there isn't like a dog in the background. And that's when you really start to increase the different mechanisms you have for detecting those different differences.
Finally, my final question is, what is the biggest vision you have for your work? What gets you up in the morning? What really drives you as a founder of an amazing startup that is going to change many lives, and will have a lot of impact in future treatments and diagnosis? What is your vision, Liam?
Really, I think the answer to the second part of your question was like what really drives us. When you have a user, whether that's a clinician or a researcher or a patient, say, "This is like amazing. This is really helping me. This is solving a concrete problem. This is what really excites me." Just sort of developing things in the abstract is less exciting, but when you have someone providing that feedback for all of your hard work and the hard work of your team, it's really, really motivating. I think where we see things going in terms of our vision is that you're going to see companies like LabCorp, et cetera, move into digital biomarkers. And so I think there's an opportunity here to be sort of like the LabCorp of digital biomarkers. And so whether it's a digital health company or a pharmaceutical company, they would send us digital samples, be that speech or facial expressions or eye movements, and then we can interpret that and then provide reports back. So we're starting with speech. There's a lot of work to do, but I think there's a lot of other modalities out there that can really help us capture all the different variation between patients and within different diseases, that we can use to help better support different treatments.
Thank you so much for joining us today for Making Impact. And it's always great talking to you, and it's always great to learn what you're working on. And again, I really want to thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you for joining us at the Making Impact series, where we talk to thought leaders about emerging technology, life sciences, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, and how these technologies are changing our lives.